This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 284, Bug or Feature? Hello and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of a pair of Michaels, and if we had more, we could actually get a full house, who is happy to be with you to provide some entertaining news stories and commentary, and who knows what else we might get here today. Let me pass over to another Michael, and hopefully you're doing okay today on a Friday, cloudy, hot. Nowhere near as hot as it is in London, though.
It's kind of bouncy between hot and miserable hot and cloudy and burning sun. I am well. It is Friday, which means it's time to talk tech with my second favorite Michael.
Okay.
Of course, my favorite Michael is me, right?
Oh, I was going to say, it's like I was hopeful that I'm in the top two, so that's
you're
good.
Top two. You're in the top two on this podcast.
Yes, that's fantastic. Have we got absolutely all kinds of good fun stuff to talk about today? And I can't wait to get started. So I won't. The first thing on the list, and I was amazed actually at this, is there's a blog post off of designedbycave.co.uk talking about the user experience around Lego interface panels. And I tweeted this out last week or earlier this week or whenever the heck I tweeted it out, Michael. And I got thousands upon thousands of impressions on this. I was like, whoa, you know, I guess I'm not the only person in the world who cares about Lego, about design.
It's funny, I saw this on a Slack channel too.
Did
like
you?
Last week, yeah. So so when you tweeted, I was like, oh yeah. So someone must have seen your tweet and put it in the Slack.
Could very well be. I mean, like I said, thousands of impressions. I haven't gone back to look yet, but it was well over 7,000 impressions on this particular one. So anyway,
and with only 6 followers, that's amazing.
I know. They must have shared it with a friend who talked to a friend who talked to a friend. But anyway, most people know that we are all Lego fans on this show. And I'm sure Andy would have had some really cool, insightful things to share on this as well. And we're missing him today, but he is taking some well-deserved time off at a undisclosed location where internet is not nearly as accessible as some other places, which is good for him. I applaud that. So this article starts off with the idea about design, user experience, and goes back to World War II with some of the problems where some of the switches, knobs, dials, buttons, etc., were easily confused by B-17 pilots.
Hey, World War II is the foundation of all good Lego design.
Really? could be. And I meant in before looking at this on the show was to actually go out and get some of these Lego design bricks that I have myself, because I recognize some of them, right? They go back to when I was a kid. Some of the space modules that that I had the little computer screen with 3 buttons on them and stuff like that.
Yeah, when I was a kid, the Lego panels did not have this on it. They were just colored bricks. I think the only thing that had little designs on it were people's faces, and that was it.
Maybe that was the new innovations that were there. I don't know. But without walking through the entirety of the article, go have a look. It does talk about the way that you can easily discern what you're trying to do, which is all the whole purpose of a user interface and user interface design anyway.
Well, any good design should imply usage in the design.
Right. And they did focus for at least a moment in this this particular thing here too on the Dragon capsule too. And Michael, I know you and I were both watching the launch sequence for SpaceX going up
and the landing.
Yeah, you know, and well, and the landing
splashdown. Excuse me.
But they had a big focus on the user experience that Tesla or Tesla-esque, right? Because it's SpaceX, you know, they're on their own thing. We're using in the capsule as well. So have a great read through this. Look at the confusing examples. Look at the clearer examples, and then also marvel at the opportunity about how Lego has matured on these designs over the years as well. Very cool stuff.
I liked it. Well, speaking of maturing or not, I got the opportunity to watch the first episode of Star Trek Lower Decks. Have you seen this yet?
I knew you were going to ask that question, so I could say, yes, I have, because
excellent.
Otherwise, you know, I'd be like, no, I know nothing about it. Why don't you tell us all about it? So I did not watch the entirety of it because 26 minutes is a little tricky, but it's on YouTube, so you yes. don't have to buy the CBS pass as yet. But I think once you watch it, you're going to say, oh, my goodness, I need to see more of this.
So I picked up CBS All Access a couple of months back so I could watch Picard and Star Trek. The other Star Trek Discovery, I think, or anyway, I think it was Discovery. It's done by the people who do, I think, Rick and Morty. Is that right?
Oh,
and it is good, goofy, silly, lowbrow humor, the type of thing that I really need right now, set in the Star Trek universe. The basic premise is you've got four crew members. Two of them are in the command staff. One of them is in the science staff, and one is in engineering. But they're like entry-level drones on this starship. They live in the bowels of the ship. They have aspirations, at least some of them do, to get onto the bridge. And it is the comical, fun experiences that they're having in the Star Trek universe. And It's just silly, it's goofy, it's a cartoon, but it has enough Star Trek flavor and feelings and experience to get your inner geek on, and I'm enjoying it.
How many episodes are up on CBS at this point in time, Michael?
At this point in time, I think we're up to two now.
Okay.
It just came out last week.
Very cool. Yeah, and the comments are already hilarious, too, because there's all kinds of people going, oh, I hate this. I didn't like Rick and Morty to begin with and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
you know, there you go. So
I'm glad you had a chance to see it in the feed and watch some of it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because just the vibe, it's, like I said, good, lowbrow,
clean,
mindless comedy, light. You don't have to worry about
character development
or pandemics or character development. People are exactly what they look like. They're gonna do the jokes that you expect them to do, and it's nice light humor in the Star Trek universe.
So moving from things that seem to be working to things that aren't, there's a Verge article that you found, Michael, that talks about apparently a bug that kept deleted photos and messages
for
a while.
Yeah, so a couple of years back I killed my Facebook account and then got sucked back in for the nonprofit that I'm doing and, you know, some of the advertising and for promote this show. I mean, when we post a show, it goes up on our Facebook page. When I killed it, I did a download of everything. And just the data feed that they collect on you was just horrendous. And as you know, Instagram is owned by Facebook. And I imagine they share data across their platforms. And so this is a security researcher who requested a feed of their data from Instagram and discovered that stuff that was supposedly deleted about a year ago was still in the feed. It was still tracked on the servers. The data was still around. And when you get into a situation when you're dealing with customers and trust and data privacy and things of that nature, this bug seems much more like a feature when you're trying to profile your customers in order to sell them ads. So I found it very interesting that this was there. I'm not going to say it is a feature. It could be a harmless bug. It happens. You and I both have developed software in our careers.
Yep.
And bugs happen.
Bugs happen.
Any complex system will never be bug-free.
Features happen, too.
Yeah, features happen. So this is one of those ones that feeds right into the narrative on bad behavior.
Yeah, well, and interesting, again, you know, reading the comments, sometimes you get an extra, you know, dose of fun from this. One of the comments suggests that, you know, maybe the problem they fixed was getting rid of the deleted images and the copy of the information, as opposed to fixing the not deleting images after a year. So,
yeah, I think maybe the bug that they fixed is don't delete it, but just don't tell them we don't delete it.
you gotta think that when you delete things, there's information in why you deleted things too, and that mm-hmm. might lend itself to other intriguing insight about a person or a thing.
I mean, many times the data about the data is much more important than the data itself.
Ooh.
You know?
Ooh. I like
think
that.
Think about that. I mean, the fact that, you know, you can build social networks, not necessarily about who calls who, about who says what to whom, but just by tracing all the connections in the calls, right? That's much more informative in many cases than, you know, hey, Michael, I'm calling you up here. You want to go meet and grab a cup of coffee, right? That's irrelevant in the larger scheme of the network effect that's going on.
It's not the coffee that's important or the message. Right. It's the connection.
Yes.
And the strength of those connections.
There's a lot of really interesting things that you can do with this data. And, you know, looking in the comments, there's comments about the EU, and I would assume that with things like GDPR, when you claim you're doing something to comply, and one of the GDPR rules is as a data processor has to do with, you know, I'm going to process the data in the manner in which you have agreed for me to process it. And if that agreement is delete the data,
well,
that is a potential issue.
It's hard to have a right to forget if you don't actually do the forgetting part.
Yeah, so this one really caught my eye just for all the crazy reasons, as you can imagine. And I do find it interesting. And hopefully it was a bug and they're resolving it. And we will get back to the feature of posting pictures of our lunch.
Or more. You know what? I'm not an Instagram user, but I was happy to see that UNC, for the start of this fall semester, one of the traditions of the school is that you go and get a drink from the old well because it brings you luck on the first day of classes. Now, with social distancing, you don't want to do that. So there was an Insta filter that was created that allows you to virtually, you know, do something like that. And that was kind of nifty to go see. And speaking of virtually doing a quick little drink from the old well, there is a company called Nreal who is providing new augmented reality glasses, which are not exactly cheap, but not super expensive either, given some of the other ones that we've seen so far. And if you are getting a Galaxy Note, you know, in for a penny and for a $295 pound, you can get them there in Korea.
Yes.
In Korea.
Yeah, I saw this one too, and I've not heard much about the specs of these AR glasses. I mean, they actually, it's funny, they almost look like they could be cool, normal-looking glasses, except they sit about an inch off the face.
Yeah, that's true. They're a little far out. And
yeah, which kind of makes them not look as good as they appear to look.
Right.
But, you know, having multiple adapters on it, one for a true VR cover, so it blocks out all the incoming light, and it's purely a VR experience versus an AR overlay experience.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it has built-in hand tracking is kind of cool, especially if you're using it from a standpoint of with a mobile device. Right?
They're fear-sensitive glasses, aren't they?
So I hope to see these at some point in time, but obviously, as you say, they're in Korea only right now, so we'll see.
Yep. Super cool. But you know, my giggling aside, it seems that that is an intriguing way to say, hey, I can do augmented reality or virtual reality simply by putting essentially sunglasses over the front of your glasses that block out additional light. So
yeah, and I seem to remember one or two other AR glasses companies
that do that too.
Allow that feature. Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't seen that before, so that's why I went all Hitchhiker's Guide on you there for a minute. now, speaking of funny things, I always do. Hoopy Fruits, man. Hoopy Fruits. I was happening to take a peek through Car and Driver, look at their stuff every so often, and they had an example here of an augmented reality capability where you can now take a Ford F-150 and place it anywhere you want. And the funniness of this article was where they had people that put it in a kiddie pool or put it, you know, in on their TV, or you could stick it in your fridge by just shrinking and expanding it. So to me, that was a little bit funny because you're not necessarily seeing, hey, can this fit in my garage, which could be a really intriguing use case to do an augmented reality version of a car, but to see where you might like to, you know, have it like in your driveway or other places. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, this is actually really interesting because guy I used to work with years ago is an engineer at Ford, and he had pinged me back in June the launch video for the F-150. It was about a 40-minute video presentation during the summer, they've really done a lot with this truck.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff in there.
It's pretty amazing, and I threw the link to the launch video into the show notes for people who've not seen what a launch event looks like for a workhorse truck, right? I mean, these things. One of the things that I do in my day life is work with engineers, especially in product engineering, and dealing with things like how do you manage variation in design. And I was trying to explain the concept to somebody, and I said, look, think about it as a truck, right? When Ford announces a truck like the F-150, they don't announce one. There's like 8 or 10 different variations. 90% of the trucks are the same, but the differences is where the complexity in engineering that truck is. And so this the launch video actually does a really, really great job of explaining the different consumer-facing variants of the F-150.
Hmm. I'll have to give it a watch. I've been super impressed with what Ford has been doing around design, and the kinds of things that they're doing, like bringing the new Bronco to the world and all of the elements that are in place there, the Sasquatch capabilities, Ford is doing some really neat things these days.
Hey, have you driven a Ford lately?
Ah.
For those who don't recognize that tagline, that was an ad.
It was, but it. Wasn't paid for it. Yes.
We are not sponsored by anyone.
Well, we're sponsored by ourselves, really.
Well, yeah.
Your favorite Michael sponsors
right.
The show,
sponsored
as I understand.
Michael.
Yeah, Michael. moving to some other sponsorship ideas and capabilities and so on and so forth, Fortnite, local Fortnite. North Carolina company, has some interesting things occurring just this week. And probably the biggest news of the bunch here is that Fortnite has been kicked off of the Apple App Store.
Well,
soon as they put in a payment environment into the game, right?
So Fortnite and Apple have been going back and forth for over a year on this.
Yep.
Right, and they had threatened to pull it off the app stores. They did some funky stuff with Android a while back. The main thing is Fortnite does not want anybody else to get in between their customers giving them money.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple, you know, for all the, you know, walled garden statements, and we'll get to that in a second, has been fairly consistent that they expect, if your app makes money by leveraging Apple stuff, i.e. running on an iPhone,
the platform,
they expect a cut. It's that simple. And you can decide if you're going to take money in your app, that you're going to give up some of that money to Apple. Amazon originally said, okay, we're not going to do that, which is why the Amazon Kindle experience went from being able to buy books in the Kindle app to go to Amazon's webpage. And you can go to the webpage on the iPhone, iPad, etc. Others have decided, okay, we're willing to cut the thing, cut a piece for Apple, and Apple changed their policy that from a subscriptions perspective, after 1 year, the rate goes from 30 to 15%, right? So a 15% cut to have access to Apple's customers, hardware customers, and platform customers. Fortnite has said, hell no, we're not doing it. No, no, no. And so they tried, after being going back and forth to the point where they were pulled off of Android, you may remember, and they set up their own type of payment system there too. They went back and said, nope, we're going to do it in the app. And Apple said, I warned you, you're out.
Yep, yep. So it's an amazing set of activity. It feels a little bit like a whole slew of dominoes.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
you just go chick, and then watch them all go.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, especially as Apple is becoming more and more of a services-based company.
Yeah,
driven off of their walled garden. And I thought Fortnite was hilarious with their latest jab at that when they put out their new 1980 Fortnite video, making fun of the original 1984 Apple ad.
Yep.
About, you know, the evils of the walled garden of the IBM PC back then.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting how this plays out. I mean, I understand all aspects of this. I mean, I write apps on the App Store. I don't charge for them, so they can take their 30% off of my zero all they want. but I can imagine, I mean, if you're pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars a year from a game, and you're giving up 30%,
that's a little bit of money. Yeah.
And if you took that money and built your own infrastructure for managing payments and customer complaints and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's probably less than that 30%. So I can understand the calculus there too.
Yeah, I understand the method and the rationale for sure. And the Kindle example is a good one for what the challenges are in an environment like this, and the way Amazon solved for that problem is not the best user experience, right? Because you have to leave the app in order to go to the web, in order to do the buying, you know, similar. Actually, this reminds me of, wasn't it Comixology had a similar thing?
Then they were bought by Amazon.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So you had to kind of jump several hoops, and it broke your experience. And when you break the experience, the tendency to finalize the transaction is broken too. And then you're like, you know what? I'll just go get myself a cup of coffee, or, you know, maybe walk the dog.
as someone who is doing stuff with deep linking in his app, you can do deep linking from your app to the web page, on your site, on the device, in a browser, with the content that's necessary. And then are you not in a browser and Apple doesn't tax the browsers?
Right.
Right? And so it literally is one extra button press. Because most people leave their accounts logged in on their browser anyway.
And we all know what the story is around a one-click action. So one extra button press, even though it sounds like, you know, what's the big deal, is in fact a big deal.
It is a deal.
Again, you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, and if you have just a small percentage of people that don't follow through and close out that transaction that they started, it can all of a sudden turn into big money. So Apple looks like they're trying to solve a similar problem, a little on the reverse side here and kind of on your deep linking notion, Michael, that when you have an Apple News article in your Apple News app, you look at it in Apple News. And then when you want to share it with somebody who may or may not be in the Apple News ecosystem, you've got to go open it in a browser and then send it on to them via Slack
and
or whatever,
and
right?
You and I experience this all the time because we both do use the Apple News app.
Extensively.
Not News Plus.
Speak for yourself, actually. I am in News Plus, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I actually pay for individual news sources because I figure that gets them more money than if I bought News Plus.
It does, right? Because it's directly to them and there's not a middleman.
Well, no, the middleman in this case still is Apple, so I subscribe to the Washington Post through Apple News.
Yep.
Right? So that's like $5 a month versus $9 for everything. But I know that's $5 a month going to a news source, not all the People magazines and others, right? Which I have no interest in. Anyway, but my point is we experience this because as we put the show notes together for this show, sometimes we'll catch an Apple News article.
Right.
And then we'll have to go in and go to a browser and search for it in order to create a link that's workable for people who don't use an Apple device. So that's a secret behind the curtain. You're welcome.
Now you told everybody. Now they're gonna know.
Now, so here's the thing, though. Last summer, when Catalina was in beta, with the initial round of what was it called? The code name for Marzipan apps.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which was the precursor to all the SwiftUI stuff that's now available that allows you to run iPad apps on Apple Silicon as native apps, basically, right? One of the things that I was experiencing over the summer was this exact thing.
Right.
Where if I went into Apple News and clicked a link or grabbed a link and went to a browser, it would launch Apple News again. Right.
Right. The URL essentially came
from
Apple News.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took a while to figure out how to work around this. Well, given that with Big Sur and iOS 14 and iPadOS 14, they are blurring the lines a lot more between what is a Mac experience and what is an iOS experience. I think there's two ways to look at this. I think one of the ways they're looking at it is that they're trying to show value to the companies that are willing to put their content in Apple News Plus by saying this content came from there. And if you share it, it will go back to there so that they can show, you know, I have 6,000 people linking to that article. Versus if some of them went to a browser, they might only be able to say, I got 3,000 people linking to that article from Apple News Plus, and the other three would be coming from web sources. And so they can't sell to their content providers the value of Apple News Plus. To your point, the user experience is I send you an article and you're on an Android device and it goes, right? Because it doesn't know how to deal with the link. Or Apple may decide to put an Apple News Plus app on Android. Who knows, right? They did it with Apple Music.
Yep.
Right? So how do you balance those two? And this is the other half of that, the third half of that. You like that?
Is very car talk of you.
If I'm on the Washington Post website in my browser on Big Sur and I click a link that's also available in News Plus, that's where it captures you and puts you in News Plus.
Well, so I would almost interpret that a little bit differently in the sense that since you are a subscriber to the Washington Post through Apple News, if you click on something through a web where you haven't authenticated necessarily, so it doesn't know that you've got a subscription, this will allow you to have the experience within the confines of Apple News to be able to read the article and not have to go through a different authentication mechanism,
right, and
everything
else
that it entails.
The Apple News Washington Post subscription I have will not let me view it through a regular Washington Post webpage. Just like I do have a New York Times subscription for the website, which when it was still in Apple News Plus, because they pulled it out.
Exactly, yep.
I could not get to it from there because it says you haven't paid for it in Apple News Plus.
Right.
So, yeah. So this is another tough one to crack. And the question is, if you are an Apple ecosystem person, which answer is better for you.
Well,
you've got News Plus on all your devices.
Exactly. So that's part of where I'm parked too. I like the news experience. I like the ability to navigate. I like the ability that it provides me in a lot of spaces, and because of that fluidity, that is no pun intended, a plus for me. But there are others I could see where this is potentially problematic, because if Safari recognizes, oh, wait a minute, that link actually does exist in Apple News, and you click on it, the browser talks to Apple News, opens up the app in Big Sur, that can start to be annoying to some, and that might cause some other consternation into the future too.
Yeah.
So let's see how this evolves and where it goes. So super interesting. Yeah. We're going to run out of time real fast, but we do want to talk about comics. We made the allusion, just the mention of Comixology and where things went with Amazon. The reading of comics is something that is a big deal for you and me both, right, Michael?
Yep. As a matter of fact, I used to use the Go Comics app on my iPad to read them.
Did you?
Yep. Because there are, you know, 10 or 15 that I like to read each day. And I've slowly gotten out of the habit of it. And then I find links, etc. And this article from over at Six Colors is a great little example of how you can use the Shortcuts app to dynamically build your comics page for the day. And what it does is there's an array that you fill out with the comic title and the URL to the comic, and then it will launch and give you a direct link to today's comic, which in Go Comics is problematic because it gives you kind of like a cutback version of it. You have to click down through to get to the actual comic panels for the day. And what I'd really like, and hopefully we've got some, you know, industrious listener who would take this Apple script, shortcut, and turn it into suck out all the comics and put it in a single PDF. And then I get a daily PDF comic page.
And all this is to avoid the friction related to clicking through.
Yeah. And it's to avoid the clicking through. And what this does is it opens up one tab per comic on the actual detailed today's comic.
Right.
So if you have 50 different comics you follow daily, it's going to open up 50 tabs in your browser.
Yowza.
I think what would be cool, and I just don't have time to do it, so this is my plea, is to take this and suck out the actual image and throw it into a combined PDF file and turn it into a comics page each day.
Or build it into News Plus and have a comics section of the news, kind of like we used to have with the newspaper.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then make sure the comics providers get some money for their creativity and the advertising that happens in that fashion will handle that too. Yay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Michael, I think we're kind of ready to wrap. And for folks, you probably have heard the dice at the end of our show on a regular basis.
Yes.
And Andy threw into the mix an example here of some ice dice to freshen up your drinks and your special cocktails or whatever. And if you join into this Kickstarter, you could have ice dice that you could now throw into your glass and enjoy a cool beverage with frozen dice, which I thought
Very
was
cool.
Just super fun.
Very cool. And in honor of that, I had seen a new game out on Apple Arcade that I started playing recently, which is the Game of Thrones Tale of the Crows, which is the most chillaxing game I've played in a very long time. It's designed as kind of a story adventure, but it happens when you're not playing it. You go in, you got a couple of things to look at, a couple of choices to make, and then sometime later you can come back and it will have done those. It takes the excitement and blood-curdling pace of Game of Thrones and turns it into just a really relaxing, calming, soothing game.
Awesome. All right, well, team, that is where we're going to have to leave it for today. So hope you enjoy this nice, relaxing game in Apple Arcade, isn't it? So yes. you need to have a subscription to that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All of these services within the Apple ecosystem.
It's almost like they're trying to create a walled garden where they make money off of services.
Yeah, and maybe bundle them. I hear that's coming too.
That's a rumor for October.
Well, we shall see. All right. Enjoyed speaking with you, Michael.
Michael?
And
bye,
everybody. See you.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.